The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I'd like to continue today with the theme for this month of mindfulness of speaking. And the first week, 2 weeks ago, I talked about speaking mostly from the point of view of paying attention to oneself as one speaks, what happens in one's body, what happens in one's energy, what happens emotionally, kind of to learn how to be centered in oneself and present as one speaks for all the information that's there. Last week, I talked some about the tremendous value that's found in noticing the motivations behind why we say what we want to say. So what prompts us to say what we want to say? What are we trying to do when we speak? And it's quite awesome to realize that there are many agendas that we often try to fulfill in our speaking that are not obvious to us when we speak. So just to pay attention to that area of what motivates, why we're saying what we're going to say, I think is a very powerful practice in its own right. And what I've tried to do is to avoid talking about the so-called ethics of speaking. Often in Buddhist circles, people give talks on right speech, and so the rules, you know, the guidelines for what makes up right speech. And we'll get to that at the end of this series of talks. But I wanted to avoid that because I think there's a lot more to speaking than the ethics of it, the guidelines of it. And so for today, the area I want to explore, trying to avoid the so-called ethical in the sense or moral or terms of guidelines or rules or whatever, what is the right speech, is I wanted to talk about the dangers and opportunities found in speech, in talking. And it's meant to be just a kind of a laying out discussion about, you know, some of the common dangers and opportunities so that so you can become more sensitive to what the dangers and opportunities are of speech, what the consequences can be when we speak. And hopefully without any judgment, too much judgment about that, just, oh, there's a danger. Oh, if you lie, there's particular dangers that come along with that. So it's more like that. And my hope is to kind of present this little bit, just enough, good enough, so that when you leave here today, you'll want to reflect and explore this topic over the next week on your own. What are the dangers and opportunities that are found in speaking? And if you have a bigger sense, bigger understanding of a wider range of danger, wider range, territory of opportunities in our communication, perhaps you're more likely to communicate differently because of that kind of more expanded understanding that can come. Some people, in terms of ethics, which I wasn't going to talk about so much, some people would like to look for like a first principle, the basic foundation from which we can have an ethical life. And sometimes a variety of things that people establish as first principles so that you can have some criteria by which to decide what is ethical and what is not. And I think one of the things that qualifies as the kind of first criteria in the teachings of the Buddha is found in the following statement, which the Buddha said repeatedly in different forms, different ways. But the simplest way maybe is this way. A wise person avoids what is harmful to oneself and to others. A wise person engages in what is beneficial for oneself and for other people. So as a first principle, does that sound profound? Maybe it sounds kind of like a little bit too simple, but the idea of benefit covers the gamut of what can be beneficial. And he didn't, Buddha didn't mean it's beneficial for you to win the California lottery. You know, that, you know, that's, but rather what's ultimately beneficial, what is beneficial in some really significant way. And so someone who's wise, what defines wisdom in Buddhism is someone who has a very clear understanding between what is it that causes harm and what is it that causes benefit. What other criteria for wisdom, are there other criteria for wisdom that might be more useful? And useful is an important idea. What is really useful for human beings? What's beneficial for human beings? What's helpful for human beings? So a wise person sees what's helpful, sees what's beneficial, knows that. So it requires in Buddhism the capacity to make certain kinds of discriminations, certain kind of distinctions, and be able to kind of tell the difference between what is beneficial and what is harmful. And I love it that the Buddha said, didn't say a wise person knows what's beneficial for oneself only, or a wise person only knows what's beneficial for everybody else, but that it's a mutuality. A wise person considers both. We don't keep ourselves out of the picture, and we don't keep others out of the picture. There's a healthy way of understanding both. So in terms of speech or communication, what are the dangers and opportunities in speech in relationship to other people, and what's the dangers and opportunities in relationship to oneself? So in terms of other people, I think that a very fascinating area of exploration around speech is, does our speech divide us or bring us together? Or do we feel more connected to someone when we speak, or do we feel more distant from them? This act that I'm about to say, what direction does that, what are the consequences of that act of speech? And, you know, it can be very simple, someone's, you know, how you say, you know, how are you to someone? And someone says, oh, I've had a hard day. And a person might respond, that's too bad. And in that very moment, you know, there was opportunity. When someone says, I had a hard day, you know, there's an opportunity to connect or to feel, you know, somehow make a connection there. And to say, oh, it's too bad, you know, it's too bad, could be kind of, oh, then the person doesn't want to open up anymore, doesn't want to share anymore, they've closed down, oh, so much for that person. I remember when I was 14, I lived in a boarding school high up in the mountains. Beautiful, beautiful place in the mountains. And I was walking along the mountain road with an older friend of mine from school. And somehow, I was just old enough, just beginning to have some kind of reflections about how awesome, awe-inspiring, or with a question mark behind it, of what it was like to be a human being. What is it like to be alive in this, you know, here I had this immense city, this beautiful sky and this beautiful mountain and valley below. And I said, you know, what are we here for? What's this life about? And my older friend turned to me and said, don't be so silly. I just closed that part of me down. He said, well, that's the response I get. Then, you know, not only was I going to not share any more my questioning, what I was feeling, my friend, but it took me probably 4 or 5 years before I was willing to open that part of myself up to someone again. So, you know, what impact do we have? Do we feel a little bit closer? Do we feel more separate as a result? Are we interested? Do we care whether we feel more connected or more distant from the people we communicate with? And that's a very interesting topic itself, because If we're so much on our own agenda, so much caught up in our own inner drama and world, and what's important for us and what we're trying to accomplish, we might not be at all, this is the last thing we'd be interested in is how someone else is. Because they're just in the way. People are just getting in the way of what I'm trying to do, what I'm trying to accomplish. So, is that wise? It's, from the Buddha's point of view, it's not wise if you're not concerned with the welfare of everyone in the picture. Is there some way that we could be motivated to be concerned with the welfare of others in a way that seems appropriate, doesn't feel like it diminishes us? And I think this is where I think mindfulness or meditation is very important. Because meditation is a softening or a relaxing of the compulsions that drive us. And if we're not driven by compulsion, compulsive feelings and attitudes and ideas, then I think it's more, almost natural, it's more likely that we're going to be sensitive, take in the experience of someone else. We're going to be interested, we could be naturally concerned. And a number of Buddhist teachers, when they teach about right speech, one of the common instructions is to pause. Not what you say, not listening, but pausing. Because in the pause, there's a chance to check in and notice what's going on. In the other person, in yourself, what's happening in the relationship. So one of the consequences of communication is it can either connect us to people, it can separate us. Sometimes connection is frightening. Sometimes it can feel oppressive to be more connected. Sometimes that's the last thing we want is more people in our lives. Please, you know, you spend a day around people all day. A friend of yours says, you know, can we share? And you go, and no way. No, one more person sharing. And you know, but that doesn't necessarily express your deepest wish or whatever. It just expresses the exhaustion of the moment of the day. You know, you just need some space and time. Speech and communication can not only separate and divide people who talk to each other, it can also divide communities, people from each other. And so, you know, gossip, for example, or there's divisive speech. There's a beautiful story of a man who went around the village slandering the rabbi. And at some point he felt some remorse for having done all the slander. So he went to the rabbi and apologized and said, "How can I make amends?" And the rabbi said, "Oh, go get a feather pillow, you know, pillow filled with feathers, and cut it open and walk around the village and kind of scatter those feathers all over." So he did, and the wind picked up the feathers and scattered them around. And then the man went back to the rabbi and said, "Well, I scattered all those feathers. Have I made amends yet?" And the rabbi said, "Well, now you need to go back and collect all those feathers." And the man said, "Well, it's impossible to go and collect all those feathers now. They're scattered in all directions in the wind." Well, in the same way, you can't really make amends when you've been slandering someone. It goes out and all, who knows how far it goes out, spreads out into the wider community. And it's very hard to go out and collect all those, you know, that chain of communication that has gone out there. So you can apologize, you can get forgiven perhaps, but can you really stop the harm that's been set in motion? And sometimes it's very hard, especially if you talk to a lot of people. I've known people who have sent out emails to just, I don't know, the spur of the moment, they decided to tell everyone on their email list about something that turned out not to be true. And then, what do you do then? I guess you can send out a second email to everyone. But who knows where those emails went? They get forwarded and forwarded. So the idea of divisiveness in the, it can create disharmony in a community, disharmony between friends. And even things which are not intentionally creating divisiveness can somehow separate and create harm that way. We can harm, in that sense, it's possible to harm people's reputation. Remember, Steve Gassner once gave me a beautiful book on, remember that book he gave me called Words That Heal,
Words That Heal,
yeah. Beautiful book. That very idea, words that heal and words that hurt. So the words, some words can heal, some can hurt. And there's a story in there of a man who prevented the assassination of President Ford here in San Francisco. And somehow he was there in the crowd, and I guess he pushed down the gun, and so President Ford wasn't assassinated. And the reporters, of course, were very interested in this man who stopped the assassination. And the guy said, "Please, don't write anything about me." Well, that got the journalists' curiosity. Well, don't laugh. Don't laugh. So they looked into, what was going on with him, and they found out, this is 1975 or so, they found out that he was gay. So then a journalist went to his mother in Chicago or someplace and knocked on her door and said, "What do you think about your son being gay?" It's the first she heard of it. Within a few years, the man had committed suicide. So what is it, the act of speech, publicizing something, getting things known? What are the consequences of how we speak? And it can seem pretty innocent or seem appropriate. Dig up the news, right? And then there's opportunities, right? There's opportunities of bringing people together, creating harmony. And so when I try to be conscious. I'm not as good. It's hard. It's very hard, this mindfulness of speaking. But I try to be conscious of talking well about other people. I don't try to lie about it. But if there's something I appreciate about people, I like to try to say it to others. If we're talking about that person. I don't know, it's all kinds of things you could say. Because I think it's good for the heart. It's good for the people. It's good for communication. It's good for, I'm just so impressed by people. I think it's so hard to be a person. And I think people are all, my impression is everyone's trying so hard. And I just think that we should all give ourselves lots of credit and support for that. So we can hurt people with how we speak. We can create divisiveness, disharmony in community. In the monastic tradition, there's a lot of rules from Buddhist monastics for what they on speech, what they should and shouldn't say. And one of the interesting motivations for right speech for the monastics is so it doesn't undermine the faith of the wider community. And this has actually held up a very, very important point, because if you say something that undermines people's faith in their practice, they might leave their practice. If it undermines their faith in the possibility of tapping into and living from a good heart, then they might turn away from that. And so you want to one of the part of the consequences in a Dharma circle is how you speak can affects it's someone's very deepest intentions. Just like I was shut down when the guy said, "Don't be silly." If we're not careful with how we speak, that someone might feel, this community is not for me, or this practice is not for me. Or, And I've had people come to me and say, you know, I was listening to such and such a person speak, some Buddhist teacher, or, you know, I spent more time with that person. And you know, how could that person say these things after so many years of practice? And, you know, what's, is this practice really, you know, what's it good for if a person, you know, speaks that way? So that kind of breaks my heart. You know, the practice has been so meaningful for me. And if they hear that people have doubt in it because they hear other people speaking poorly, you know, it kind of feels very unfortunate. So then that's, you know, some of the dangers, and there's a whole slew of other dangers for others. And there's also dangers for oneself. There's dangers for your reputation, what other people think of you and how they relate to you, if you're known as someone who lies or causes harm in your speech. So then there's also benefit in all this. There's opportunities. And what are the range of opportunities in any given situation when you meet someone and talking with them? Is there opportunity to feel closer? Is there an opportunity to say something that gladdens their heart, that warms them? Is there an opportunity to say something that helps them relax and feel safer? Is there an opportunity to be supportive in some way? Is there an opportunity to help a community of people, a network of friends, feel more connected or more harmonious or more friendly with each other? Is there an opportunity to warm our own hearts, to soften our own hearts as we speak? Is there an opportunity to feel good? To feel, be able to relax ourselves. And how we speak, I think, affects how we feel about ourselves. So that has a kind of ethical side, of course, that if, you know, if you slander someone and you become aware of that, you feel kind of lousy. And if you said something that made someone else feel good or help someone heal in some way, then perhaps you can feel, oh, good. At least I can be relaxed, I can be soft, I can, no one's going to blame me. It feels good. But it gets more interesting, I think, around speech. And again, avoiding the ethical side. What we say has an impact on us as well. So what I have in mind this way, if I say that I am angry when I'm angry, it might seem like an honest thing to say, right thing to say. But I want to say that it suggests there's a world of difference between saying I am angry versus saying I'm experiencing anger, or there's some anger here. Not really good English to go around saying, you know, I'm experiencing anger, or I'm experiencing hunger, or, you know, there's hunger here or something. But to put things in a kind of this intransitive or this passive voice is very interesting to highlight how easy it is when you say, I am angry, for it to reify or solidify an identity. I am angry, and you better treat me that, you know, as if I'm angry. As opposed to saying, there is anger here. Anger is bubbling up inside. There's part of what's happening for me right now is I'm angry. Then it gives the person the opportunity, perhaps, to meet you or hold that you as not just an angry person, but as a person who has anger. And then maybe hold and relate to the anger differently. They can relate to the anger, not to you. So, for example, people like a lot to say, there are no bad people, they're just bad actions. And there's a lot of wisdom to that difference, because then we relate to the actions And don't generalize about who the person is. Because no one is one way. Everyone's made up of a mixed bag, a lot of different motivations and feelings and attitudes and stuff. And if we relate to people who reify ourselves or reify others, this is how they are, then it makes it very difficult to see the full range of who that person is. So how we speak can either limit or open up our capacity to see who a person is in their fullness, in the full range. You're an angry person. You're a jerk. And, you know, that's pretty limiting. But if you say, it's kind of hard for me when you left all the dishes and dirty dishes in the sink. Well, that doesn't create separation. It's just, oh, that's a, you know. Then the person can participate. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I had an impact on you. Let me go do the dishes. You say, you're a jerk. Then the person might, you know, either run away or the person might. Well, let me tell you about when you left whatever. So, that's all I wanted to say. And it doesn't feel like a very comprehensive talk on the topic. So I apologize for that. I could have maybe been better prepared and all that. But what I was, my goal was modest. So my goal was to just suggest this topic, this area of exploration. What are the advantages? What are the opportunities, and what are the potential dangers? What are the opportunities and dangers in your communication with other people? And can you stretch yourself and expand yourself to begin seeing dangers and opportunities that normally you wouldn't have seen? They're there, but normally you wouldn't have noticed. So, and one way you can do this is you can find some friends and strangers during this next week. And ask them. Ask them if they can have a conversation with you around, you know, explore with you the dangers and opportunities that are possible in speech. Okay? So, thank you. And some of you might want to start at the potluck. Thank you.